Facebook under fire for its data sharing practices. The best smart speaker. The OnePlus 6T gets high marks for its cameras. And Twitter now reveals more about you when you tweet. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, the longer form version of the podcast where I talk about all the stuff I think you should know about this week in technology. There's a lot going on, and this is not everything that happened in tech. It's just kind of like the little things that I think you should know about. And last week, I talked about how someone had texted me on Instagram and told me they had an idea for the name of this show. And I finally found that little message that was sent to me by Bob Hardy. Bob Hardy27 on Instagram said, "Hey Rich, I have an idea for what you can call your extended podcast show on Fridays." He says, "Call it Richer on Tech." And I wholeheartedly agree. I love the name. Don't know if that's going to be the full name, but he says, "Too much Apple stuff for my liking, LOL, but still love the show. Prefer more Android stuff." And Bob, I hear you. The thing about Apple versus Android, here's the deal. So Apple gets all of the attention in the press for one big reason. There are a lot of people out there that have iPhones. And not just that, there's a lot of people out there that don't understand how to use the iPhone. There's just so many little features on there. And Android's kind of the same way, but here's the big difference. Android, there are so many different manufacturers, there are so many different types of phones out there that one news story cannot fit all. Even like my tips, I did the book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. Everyone's asking, "Rich, where's the Android version?" Well, you can't do an Android version like that because there is no Android operating system that is the same on millions of different phones. The closest thing we have is Samsung. With that said, Samsung did just recently change up their user interface. I've been testing this out on the Note 9. It's called One UI, and it's actually quite slick. So maybe, just maybe, I'm not promising anything here, maybe I will do something on Android. But folks, I love Android. Don't get me wrong. Like, I really love Android. So I usually carry around two phones, one Android, one iPhone. And it's just, I haven't figured out a good way to do things on Android that kind of work across all the platforms. Realistically, when you want to do that, you almost have to talk about apps on Android and what they can do versus kind of the features of the operating system. But if I were to do something, it'd probably be on the Samsung devices. So let's start with Facebook this week, because Facebook, this is a company that just wants 2018 to go away because they cannot catch a break. They are under fire this week because the New York Times did an article saying, "Hey, Facebook, why are you sharing all this personal data that folks post with all these companies, including Apple, BlackBerry, Yahoo, Netflix, New York Times, Pandora, Spotify?" And Facebook came out with a blog post and said, "Look, we get it. You have a lot of questions about how we're sharing our data, but let us explain." And what they explained is that, number one, these were older features that Facebook was testing out. Some of them were integration partners. And the whole big thing about the way they were sharing the data is, specifically on Apple, Amazon, BlackBerry, and Yahoo, is that you would log in on those platforms so that you could see your Facebook posts, or you can see, you know, the various stuff that you did on Facebook on a different platform. So you can access that through Yahoo or through your BlackBerry. So it wasn't as nefarious as New York Times made it out to be, and I'm not defending Facebook here. They're trying to appeal to a wide amount of people, and basically the way you appeal to a wide amount of people is that you scare them, right? And so if you really dive deep into what Facebook was doing, it doesn't sound as scary as the New York Times made it out to be. So number one, they say that these partnerships wound down in 2014. Let's just be clear about Facebook. We are not posting private information on Facebook. And if you are, you shouldn't be. Facebook is not a private place. It never has been. It should not be construed as a private place. And I get it. There was one thing that they scared people about, which was private messages. And they said that websites like Netflix, New York Times, Pandora, and Spotify had access to people's private messages. Well, yeah, they were doing a test where you can access your private messages through these different platforms. And I get it. That does sound scary, but you have to understand anything, and let me just say this clear, anything you do on Facebook could be seen by someone else. Anything you send through Facebook could be seen. Anything you do there will be used to market stuff to you. So just understand that. And if you do, you'll have a better experience on it. Any of these sites that you're getting for free, unless you are paying them money, there should be absolutely no thought that you're getting something that is private, that is personal, that is safe, that is encrypted, that is, you know, not easily viewable by anyone else. So just keep that in mind. And you can still have fun on Facebook. You can still post your pictures there. But you just have to remember, anything that you do there, especially if it's free, look, it's not going to be private. And I understand you can have your settings set to where certain people can't see stuff. But the reality is there's always that potential and always that possibility. And Facebook is not here for our health. Facebook is here to market stuff to us and to help companies market things to you. Just keep that in mind. If you're posting pictures of your cat and your family and all the things you're doing, your vacation, I mean, come on. You have to understand, they're not doing you a service. You're doing them a service by uploading your stuff, and then they get to find out a lot of data about you. So I know a lot of people are deleting Facebook. I'm not going to say I 100% recommend that just yet, because Facebook has really done an amazing job at connecting people. I mean, think about it. Think about back when you really had a lot of fun on Facebook, like connecting with new people. They did a pretty darn good job of that. And I understand they're trying to find their way in this world where they want to make a lot of money, and they're making it off of your data. That's the way their business was written. That's what's happening here, folks. So just remember that, keep that in mind, and don't post anything stupid, right? If you think your employer can't see it, or if you think, you know, a company can't see it, or it's not being used to market to you, then you're just not getting it, because that's what's happening there. Speaking of data privacy, this one's great. Amazon Alexa user receives 1,700 audio recordings of a stranger through, quote, human error. So if you're using one of these smart speakers at home, you gotta understand that, yes, they are recording every single thing that you say to them, not everything all the time. Now, they are listening all the time, but theoretically, they're only activated when they hear that keyword. So what happened was, the story out of the Washington Post says a person in Germany requested an archive of their recordings, and they got a link to 1,700 audio files from someone else's Alexa. So imagine the surprise of this person. And of course, if you're a regular person, if you're an average person, you're going to start listening to some of these recordings on there because you're curious. And so the person did, and he listened to another man speaking inside their home with a female companion. Apparently, one of these recordings was also in the shower, I heard, which was kind of interesting. Amazon said, quote, "This is an unfortunate case of human error and an isolated incident." So let me explain. When you talk to Alexa, I'll call her that, not to activate yours, there's a recording of that. And Amazon uses these recordings to improve what she can do. And according to Amazon's help page, "We keep the recordings associated with your account to improve the accuracy of the results provided to you and to improve our services." And you do have the option to delete these recordings. But guess what? Amazon says it may degrade your experience using the device. Now, I think that's a little bit of a scare tactic, because I don't think it will degrade a certain amount, but I don't think that your 100% experience of Alexa is based on what you've said to her in the past. Some of these things are, but I think that they aggregate a lot of this stuff and use it to improve the service. I mean, this is bad. Nobody wants to think that the recordings that they made with their smart speaker is going to be sent to someone else. And Amazon says this was a one-time error, but of course, it could easily happen again. And it's interesting because you can access your recordings of Alexa on the web. So if you want to do that, you can go to the Alexa app or the Alexa privacy page and go to settings, Alexa account, and then Alexa privacy, and you can see all of your recordings and delete them. Amazon.com/Alexa privacy is the website to go to. I would recommend just taking a look. Just go in there. If you use one of these things, go in there and just see kind of what recordings you have. On Google, on your computer, you can go to Google account, then you go to navigation panel, data and personalization, then an activity controls, voice and audio activity. Now, personally, I think that you should just be able to search on Google and say, "Show me my voice recordings." And that should bring it right onto your page. But it sort of does. It brings you to a help page, but it doesn't bring you to the page that you need. and it doesn't seem like there's a really simple way to get you there. But anyway, you can go into your Google recordings and hear what you've said to Google as well. And sometimes it's pretty eye-opening because you hear exactly what you sounded like, whether it was in the morning, you know, when you're driving to work in your car and you said something to Android Auto. But it's really interesting. You could hear the kids in the background. So, but it's not easy to get to. Wow, there's a lot of stuff to get to. See your voice and audio activity. On your Android phone, open your device's settings and then go to Google. Let me do this right now. I'm going to bring up my Android phone. Let's go. So I'll go to settings, and then we'll go to Google, and then we'll go to Google account. Okay, there it is. Now at the top, tap data and personalization. There it is. I see that. Under activity and timeline, type my activity or tap my activity. Okay, where's my activity? There it is. Okay, I got it. Under the search bar, tap filter by date and product. So let's tap filter. Oh, there we go. And now uncheck the box next to all products. Check the boxes next to assistant and voice and audio. Assistant and voice and audio. Wow. Okay, now we can press apply, and there comes some recordings. Okay. Oh, wow. This is great. So here's the stuff it said. Okay. So let's see. Show my agenda. Play the butt song yesterday at 6:03 p.m. Okay, clearly my kids have been playing with this thing. Wake me up in 1 hour, so let's hear it.
Hey, Google.
Oh, wow, it activated my phone.
Wake me up in 1 hour.
Oh, my gosh. Wake me up in 1 hour. So there you have it. Oh, my gosh. And then you can go through and actually delete these things. I said 18 things to Google yesterday. Here's another one that I said. Turn off all the lights in the office. Turn off the Christmas tree. So anyway, you'll have a lot of fun. I'll put the links in the show notes so you can see exactly where that stuff is and listen to some of your recordings. Speaking of smart speakers, Loop Ventures did their annual smart speaker IQ test. Kind of interesting. As you might expect, who came out on top? Of course, Google Assistant answered 88% of questions correctly. Siri, 75%. Lexa 73, Cortana 63, and some big improvements here. So Google Assistant last year got 81%. Siri, huge improvement, 52% last year versus 75% this year, so she's gotten a lot better. Lexa 64% versus 73% this year, and Cortana 56% versus 63%. So they asked these things 800 questions, including local questions like where is the nearest coffee shop? Commerce questions, can you order me more paper towels? Navigation, how do I get to Uptown on the bus? Information, who do the twins play tonight? And then a command, remind me to call Steve at 2 p.m. today. So also important to note that they asked the questions on these smart speakers, not on the phone. They are slightly different when you ask these questions on a phone versus the speaker. So the biggest thing that tripped these things up was something that involved a proper noun, often the name of a local town or a restaurant. Although I found that Google is really good at figuring out these names, especially when you say proper names of restaurants. So again, they did get 88% right, so that's pretty darn good. Google Home has the edge in 4 out of 5 categories, but fell short of Siri in the command category. And it's really interesting that they said that because it's funny, as bad as some people say Siri is, it's actually really good when you're talking about doing things like email and messaging, like especially text messages. You can ask her to like read your unread text messages or reply to someone, and she's really good at that stuff. Google, not so much. And the challenge with Google is that it integrates with a lot of different apps on your phone. And that's the big problem, is that Siri only really integrates with the iPhone native app. She's getting a little bit better with some of the extensions that they've added to Siri, but for the most part, people are using Siri to interface with native apps on the iPhone. The largest disparity, according to Loop Ventures, exists in the commerce section. You would think Alexa would dominate that, but Google Assistant actually did really well. Knows a lot of product information, where to buy certain stuff. Google Express, just as capable as Amazon in terms of purchasing stuff or restocking common goods you've purchased before. Alexa's surprising commerce score is explained by an example in our test. So question, how much would a manicure cost? Alexa said, the top search result for manicure is this pedicure kit. It's $60 on Amazon. Would you like to buy it? That doesn't really help you at all. Google Assistant said, on average, a basic manicure will cost you $20. However, special manicures like acrylic, gel, shellac, and no-chip range from $20 to $50, depending on the salon. So as you can see, Google is much better at parsing information from the web and delivering that to you, and that's definitely my experience. One of the reasons I really like Google Assistant, in fact, I like all of these things for various reasons. Alexa is really good at knowing your shopping history on Google. Alexa is really good at knowing your shopping history and the stuff you've ordered on Amazon, so she's really good at answering questions about that and reordering similar items. Where I find Google Assistant to just be really solid in a wide variety of categories, but when it comes to controlling my phone, absolutely I think that Siri does a much better job. But again, we're talking about smart speakers here, not just the smartphones. OnePlus 6T, a big Android phone that launched this year from the Chinese startup OnePlus. So getting the latest camera reviews from DxOMark, it actually did really well. It got good performer. So the OnePlus 6T is a very solid Android device if you want sort of the best bang for your buck when it comes to Android devices. You're talking a phone that's about $550, and it checks off all the marks. It's got great hardware. It's got excellent software. It's got a really nice camera. And the surprising part about this review is that the OnePlus 6T has the same camera as the OnePlus 6. It's got a 16-megapixel main camera, 20-megapixel secondary module for digital zooming. And according to DxOMark, it says that their tests show that firmware changes have the 6T doing a little bit better than its predecessor, the 6. So how does this thing score overall? 98 points, which ties it up with the Google Pixel 2, which is a very good camera. It holds 10th place in DxO's mobile rankings. So when you think about the top 10 smartphone cameras out there, let's just take a look at the list right now. Number one, Huawei P20 Pro, which not really for America, but it's available in an international version. Number two, Apple iPhone XS Max. Number three, HTC U12 Plus. Number four, Samsung Galaxy Note 9. Number five, Xiaomi Mi Mix 3. Then you have the iPhone XR, Google Pixel 3, and the Samsung Galaxy S9. So a lot of Huawei's on there, a lot of Chinese manufacturers, also the HTC, phones that are not very common here in America. So for the OnePlus 6T to get down there under the OnePlus or the Google Pixel 2 or tying that is pretty good. OnePlus 6T I think people will be very happy with. Let's see, the reviewers liked its wide dynamic range, pleasant colors, good detail preservation, and the autofocus was reliable and quick. On the downside, zoom shots show less detail than competitors, and many HDR shots show artifacts such as ringing, ghosting, or halos. So kudos to OnePlus for launching the 6T. They also have the McLaren edition of the OnePlus 6T, which has got 10 gigabytes of RAM, which is just insane. To give you a little basis of that, the iPhone has 4 gigabytes of RAM on board. And we're not talking memory. That's, you know, how much storage is on board. But it does have a lot of that as well. But it does have a ton of RAM, which, you know, speeds things up. Speaking of Apple, according to a new report, they're going to launch an iPad Mini 5 and an entry-level 10-inch iPad next year. I already thought they had an entry-level iPad, but that's the one for $339. Maybe they're making or $329. Maybe they're making a cheaper one. But the iPad Mini 5 is very interesting to me because I bought this for my kids, and I cannot believe they haven't updated it since 2015. I bought the iPad Mini for my kids right when it came out. So I guess that was in September 3 years ago. I can't believe that. But they're saying Ming-Chi Kuo is a reliable Apple analyst. He says they're working on a new version of the iPad Mini, which would be great because it's a perfect iPad for kids. My kids have had theirs in their OtterBoxes for 3 years now, and they've been great. They haven't really slowed down too much. They work great for the kids. They're just a solid performer, and you get all the apps that you need on that device. So I will happily upgrade my kids and sell their old ones on eBay or maybe give them to a family member when I upgrade. But a lot of people have been waiting for a fifth generation iPad Mini. They say they're going to launch it in the first half of 2019. This is according to a Apple supply chain a report by the China Times. So I'm all for it. I'm ready to upgrade, and I think the iPad Mini is a great one. It's a nice size for kids especially. And I get a lot of questions about people saying, should I get the iPad Mini? Well, they don't really ask about that. They just say, should I get the iPad or should I get some other tablet? And, I always recommend the iPad because the apps are just so much better than what you get on Android when it comes to tablets, and especially kids' apps. This is where the developers really put a lot of their efforts. And I get it. If your kid's just watching Netflix, sure, the Amazon Fire tablet is going to be just fine for them. But when it comes to these educational apps, some of these things are really only available on the iPad. And I just find that the quality and ease of the iPad is just so much better. And again, look it, mine has lasted 3 years. It's in an OtterBox. I definitely got my money's worth out of this thing. It has saved us many family dinners, many meltdowns, many rides in the car. And don't get on me about screen time, but I really like the iPad. I just think it's a very solid device for the kids. And you don't want them just watching nonsense on Netflix all day. Like, some of these educational apps are pretty darn good on the iPad. New feature on Twitter. First noticed it on Android. Now it's coming to iOS. But when you tweet, it's now going to show folks what and how you're tweeting from. So right by the time and date stamp, there is now a new little piece of information that says the app or the platform that you are tweeting from. So if you're using Twitter for Android, it will say Twitter for Android. If you're using Twitter for iPhone, it'll say Twitter for iPhone. If you're using Twitter web app or Tweetbot or any other way of tweeting, folks will actually now get to see how you are tweeting. So if you're trying to hide how you're tweeting, the secret's out. So if you go into any tweet, just tap it to see kind of like a bigger version of it. You can see right in the timeline or right on that thing how people are tweeting. So it'll say, you know, the time, the date, and then, for instance, Twitter for iPhone. And I can just go down the list here. Twitter for iPad. This person just tweeted. Twitter for iPhone. Long story short, you can now see more information about how someone's tweeting. And why does this come in handy? Well, it's kind of interesting just to see if you like a celebrity. You're trying to figure out how they're tweeting, what they're tweeting from. Often people will schedule their tweets. You can now tell if they're scheduling their tweets because it will come from some sort of Twitter platform, not necessarily the app. So that's one way. Also, a lot of these tech companies get burned because they will tweet about, let's say, the new Samsung phone. And guess what? The celebrity's tweet that's saying how great this phone is comes from an iPhone. That's kind of weird, right? So it used to take something like TweetDeck to track that information down. Now you can just look right in the Twitter app on your iPhone or Android and see exactly how folks are tweeting. And sure, if you look at mine, you're not going to catch me in anything. I do schedule a lot of my tweets. And I will also tweet from both Android and iOS depending on how I'm feeling that day. So sometimes I'm on Android, sometimes I'm on iOS, sometimes I'm on the web. Sometimes I'm using Buffer, which is a great social media app that helps you schedule some of your tweets. So what happens is I don't like to slam people with tweets all day long. You know, like, I don't like to have like 25 tweets go out at once because, you know, they're kind of ephemeral, right? They just kind of disappear after a couple of minutes. So I like people to have them kind of spaced out through the day. So if it's not something that necessarily has to go out at that exact moment, I'll just kind of space it out a little bit and use Buffer. So when you look at my tweets, if you see something that comes from Buffer, chances are I'd scheduled that out from a while back. Sometimes also I do a lot of my tweeting very early in the morning, like 4 to 9 a.m. So rather than just send everything out during those hours, I'll kind of space it out throughout the day. Everyone has a different theory on this stuff, but that's kind of how I do it. And let's talk about this NASA engineer. We talked about this on TV. I don't know if you saw maybe the YouTube video, but it was a glitter bomb. It was basically a viral video about porch pirates, and this NASA engineer, Mark Rober, he made a YouTube video with a glitter bomb. It was a package that he outfitted with all these special electronics. When you take the package, when you steal it, they follow you home with GPS. They can see where you were. And when you open the package, it explodes with all this glitter. So I had this debate with my producer. I was like, there's no way that's real. There's no way he actually got people to steal these packages in a certain time frame and then recorded them and then was able to edit it all on a nice YouTube timeline and get it up to YouTube and rack up millions and millions of views. In fact, when I showed the video on TV, it had 6 million views. Business Insider is saying it racked up 40 million views in about 3 days. And now the NASA guy, Mark Rober, who I've interviewed before, by the way, is coming out and saying, okay, it was fake. So the package wasn't fake, but the payoff was. Was there anyone who actually stole this package and they tracked back to their house? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. Two of the so-called thieves were actually in on the prank. They were roped in by a friend of a friend who offered to place the package on their porch. And Rober said, I'm really sorry about this. I'm responsible for the content that goes on my channel. I should have done more. I can vouch the reactions were genuine when the package was taken from my house. I know my credibility is sort of shot. So Mark Rober is, he's done a lot of great videos for YouTube. They're often a mix of sort of engineering and surprise, and he does a great job, not discounting the fact, but YouTube is entertainment, and a lot of the stuff that you see on there, you got to kind of take with a grain of salt, because how is he able to get a porch pirate to steal these packages and then also sign off and say, yeah, I'm willing to let this video be on YouTube? No, definitely made me think twice. So clearly it was fake, but it doesn't take away from the fact that he still did something really funny, which were these packages that would explode into glitter, and also a, let's just say it smelled like someone was passing gas when this thing would open up in your house. So great idea, but not necessarily real. And by the way, I said I interviewed Mark Rober back in the day. The first time I met him, he was doing a, he came to prominence, he was a JPL NASA, you know, guy, and he came to prominence doing these shirts for Halloween. They were like costumes, and they would have a little cutout right in the middle of the shirt that you would put your iPhone, or back in that day, I think it was an iPod actually, iPod Touch, you would put that in there, and it would have like some sort of video on there. So if it was like a scary shirt, it had like a big mouth that was like all bloody and stuff and like screaming. So that would be like, that would create the mouth on the shirt. And then it had like a fireplace. So it had, the shirt had a big fireplace on it. And then where you put your iPod in, it was like a crackling fire video on your iPod video, right? iPod, I guess video, what was it called? iPod Touch had the video. So you got to give him, credit. The guy has done a lot of cool stuff in his career. And he's a smart guy, clearly. I think this was a small stumble for him. He was very excited to get this video out there. And it was a cool concept, but you got to tell people when these things are fake. I don't think it would have taken away from the video. I think you could have put that in the comments or the description. It would have been just fine. Let's talk about my book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. I got to say, I cannot believe the response to this. It is now currently on at least, oh my gosh, almost a 2-week wait on Amazon, which is really unfortunate because a lot of people are ordering it for the holidays. If you got it in early, hopefully you got it in time for the holidays. But if you're trying to order now, it is on like a 2-week delay. And the reason for that is that I self-published through Amazon, and they don't know what the reaction is going to be to any book that someone self-publishes. So they probably, when it's first launched, you know, maybe print a couple of them, a couple dozen, so that they can keep up with orders. But then as my orders are coming in, which were in the thousands every day, they all of a sudden realize, oh no, we got to print a lot more of these things. And it takes a long time to print a book, I think. I know the ones that I ordered some press copies for myself. They call them author copies, and I can order those in bulk. And it was taking like 2 to 3 weeks to get those things delivered to me. So it takes Amazon a while, and I don't think they care about me as much because I get a little discount on mine when I order them versus the average person that's ordering just one copy. Thank you to everyone who has purchased one of these. The reviews are starting to come in, and I would say a majority of them are very positive, so that's reassuring. And for everyone that reviews them on Amazon, I get a whole bunch of emails and tweets and texts from people that personally text me and let me know how much they're loving the book. And I think another part of this is that folks are ordering 2 or 3 or 4 or even 6 copies of the book at a time, and that means that they're sharing them with their friends. They're really liking them, and I love that. So thank you so much to everyone who's ordered one. I just wanted to read a few of the reviews. This was from Jeff H. He said, "This is a great book with great helpful tips. I bought one for myself and a couple others for gifts. Highly recommend. Thanks again, Rich, for all that you help us with tech." And I think I read this one before. If you're ever in the Pomona area, you got a free lunch coming your way. I think I read that on the podcast, but I like it. So thank you, Jeff. And let's see. Lone Star 10 said, "I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew a lot about my iPhone XS until I read Rich's book. This book is filled with tips to help you get the most out of this $1,100 phone. I would definitely agree. Steve Zweig says, this book answered several questions that had been puzzling me for years. Example, app management, which was formerly done through iTunes, but is now done through the App Store. I had no idea. Lots of other juicy little plums in here. Highly recommended. Steve Zweig, LA. T. Pavacek said, this is perfect. So much information. I gave up the BlackBerry and started with the iPhone 4, then 5, 6, 7, 8, and 7 Plus and 8 Plus, and I'm still learning new things with this book. Great gift. Wayne Ben says, just received my iPhone XR. This book helped me quite a bit. I learned a lot from it. The tips are very good, and we'll use this as a reference. Thanks so much to everyone who has left a review for my book. If you bought the book and you're enjoying it, please leave a review on Amazon. That will help others discover it and also sort of better understand, because if you're living in other parts of the country where you may not know Rich on Tech or Rich DeMuro, you see this book, it's the number one seller as an iPhone guide, and you're wondering if you should buy it, your review will definitely help more folks purchase it that don't necessarily know who I am and see me on TV. So thanks in advance for leaving your positive review on Amazon. I do appreciate it. If you do want an autographed copy, gumroad.com/richontech. gumroad.com/richontech. I'm selling personalized signed copies of the book. So if you want to give one as a gift to someone, or if you want to get one for yourself, it's a couple bucks more than you get it on Amazon, just because I have to do the work of shipping it out myself. So if you're sort of into that thing and you want a signed copy, gumroad.com/richontech. All right. Yes. And Lester's asking on the Facebook Live, is there an ebook version of your book? Yes, there's an ebook version. You can get it on Kindle. So also on Amazon, just grab the Kindle version. And I also got a lot of questions from people asking me if the Kindle version works on other places. They said, Rich, I don't have a Kindle, so I can't listen to it, or read it rather, on the Kindle. And I said, yeah, you can download the Kindle app for the iPad, you can download it for iPhone, you can download it for Android. So you can get the Kindle version anywhere. And in many cases, it's kind of funny because I noticed that Amazon is actually pushing the Kindle version because the other one's sort of out of stock at this point. So they're like, hey, why not get it faster and just read it on the Kindle, which is kind of funny. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I really do appreciate it. Everything I talk about here, I will put in the show notes, so check it out there, or you can go to richontech.tv. Follow me on Instagram. I think I'm going to do more on Instagram in the new year, so Instagram, I am at richontech. Do appreciate you listening. Have a fantastic holiday. I'm not sure if I'm going to be doing this podcast until the new year, so I may take a week off next week for the holidays. I've got family in town. So if you don't hear from me, have a fantastic holiday, Christmas, whatever else you celebrate, plus New Year's, and happy 2019. I will see you then. I'm Rich DeMuro. I will talk to you real soon.